HarperCollins presents The Runes of War Saga, Part 1, The Book of Torah Alta, Volume 1, The Runes of War, by Jane Welsh. Read by Joe Eyre.
For Richard, whose magic fills my life as much as it has shaped this story. Prologue. The last scaly beast lay dying on the canyon floor. A pennon, bearing the Belbidian colours, fluttered from the hilt of the lance that pierced its chest, and with the dragon's final breath, the pass was won. From the floor of the canyon thrust a commanding tor, and at its summit yawned the cavernous nest from which a dynasty of dragons had once disgorged into the air. But now, over the slaughtered monster's empty lair, the proud men of Belbidia constructed a mighty fortress. They named the fortress Torah Alta and dedicated its power to the Mother Goddess, invoking the primal gods for their blessing. For 1,000 years, Torah Alta had enforced its tyrannical rule over the pass through the Yellow Mountains. From high on its rocky throne, it could lash out to protect the peaceful lands from the bloody hordes to the north. And so absolute had been its power that in 300 years there had been no call to raise its might, for the fortress sat back, needing only to glare down at the valley. Now it happened that a great plain of ice encroached on the dread lands of northern Valaka, eating at pastures and freezing over the vast hunting grounds of the people. Tribes were forced southward into the harsh landscape of bare rock and parched soil that was the enduring monument of the ancient dragon wars. Here, every summer, the ice cap receded, and the meltwaters poured into the wasteland of the dragon scorch. The Valakan nomads grazed their herds along the banks of the seasonal rivers. When the summer melts dried out, they returned northward to the thin belt of green steppes on the fringe of the tundra, which was all that was left of their hunting grounds. But as the millennium drew to a close, the tundra gained in power and ate steadily southward until one year the spring never came and the ice no longer melted. The dragon scorch remained permanently and inhospitably arid in the fast clutches of unyielding winter. Imprisoned within the thin belt of the steppes, the Valakan tribes squabbled amongst themselves, competing for food. The desperate struggle for survival twisted their souls and made them brutal and depraved, so that neighbours murdered each other to ensure food for their own families. They seemed doomed to a barbaric extinction, until one year there arose out of their number a leader, a man of great strength and pride in his people, and he was known to them as Morbak. He prayed that a god might hear him and help his people, but none would answer. When finally Morbak was near despair, he heard a howling cry borne on the ice north wind, and the cry became wailing words. Believing the words, he took them to his people.
"Forsake all other gods but Valpeor. Turn away from the Great Mother, because she no longer feeds us from her mantle. Turn to Valpeor. He wants not prayers, but sacrifices. Let blood pour onto the earth to feed him, and he will give me strength to lead you southwards, through the dragon scorch into a new land beyond."
Morbak was consumed by these words, and he became as dark and treacherous as the land, naming himself the High Priest of Valpeor, pouring evil into the hearts of his people. He marched them south, spilling the warm blood of children in the name of his cold-hearted god. At the head of the united tribes, Morbak rode upon the back of a gargantuan troll, an ugly creature with coarse, hog-like bristles and yellow fangs. He adorned his helmet with the skull and horns of an ibex. Over his naked chest, on a string of pig gut, hung the teeth and claws of a troll. And as he assumed this demonic form, a swelling number of his followers believed he was the god incarnate. As the tribes of Morbak poured southward, following the course of the dried-out summer melts that were frozen as hard as stone, they heard tales of a Belbidian fortress built upon a tower of
Sample complete. Ready to continue?